for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. At the beginning of the summer, some political observers were ready to write Senator John McCain out of the 2008 Republican presidential race. But now McCain is embarking on what his campaign calls the No Surrender Tour. He's leading support in Congress for the troop buildup in Iraq, a strategy he's long advocated. And he's just written a book titled Hard Calls, about the qualities represented in history's great decisions. Good morning to you, sir. It's good to see you again.
Thank you, Diane, and it's always a great pleasure to be back on your program. It's one of the great pleasures I have, and not only because of your gracious courtesy, but also because of the kinds of calls and comments we get on this show, both email and in person. So thanks for having me back, and congratulations on just a couple of years of success that you've had.
Thank you so much. I want to start by asking you about the testimony that Army General David Petraeus, the top military commander in Iraq, said yesterday. He said, number one, he would send home a Marine unit of about 2,000 troops. Later this month, he would pull out a 5,000-soldier brigade in mid-December, and he predicted the U.S. would be down to pre-surge troop levels of about 130,000 by mid-July of 2008, down from the current 160,000. What's your reaction?
My reaction is that it's clear that General Petraeus feels that we are showing enough success with this new strategy as short a time as it's been in effect. As you know, Diane, it's only been some months, but that he has sufficient confidence to further reduce our troop levels. I am a little nervous about it, but I have said all along that my respect and admiration for General Petraeus is such, though, that I would trust his judgment. I'm not over there on the ground. I go over and visit frequently, as you know, but so I think it's a sign of success. Thing I'm curious about in this debate is, if I were the Democrats, I might say, look, we've kind of won here. We've calling for reductions, and we're getting them. But obviously, that's not the response that the Democrats have had, or most of them. And so I also would include in our discussion, the ambassador, Ryan Crocker, is one of the really fine members of our foreign service that we've had, and I have great respect for his views as well.
The general gave really no specifics beyond next summer.
Yep.
Does that mean that the U.S. is going to have to continue to have a large troop presence in Iraq for the next president to deal with?
Well, my understanding of General Petraeus's comments is that he will evaluate again in the spring. There will be another 4 or 5 months will have transpired, then, and events I think will continue to improve. I think that it's appropriate for us to really point out the American people two things. One, we're incredibly frustrated and saddened. This strategy that Rumsfeld had for 4 years was like watching a train wreck. In November 2003, I bitterly complained about it and condemned it and advocated this strategy that's winning. The second thing is that if we can get, Diane, American casualties down, and so that we're in a support role and the Iraqi military doing the fighting, I think Americans will appreciate a path to success. And I would finally remind you, we've got troops in the Balkans. We've had them there for years. We've got troops in South Korea. The key to it is whether Americans believe we're succeeding or not. And again, I understand their frustration and their sorrow.
Do you think that Americans hearing General Petraeus and Ambassador Crocker yesterday agree with what they heard and support what he is saying?
I think they're still very skeptical. Mm. Remember, it was 4 years of frustration, comments like last throws and a few dead enders, mission accomplished. Of course they are cynical. And I don't blame them. And I'm not sure that we've made a strong enough case that this is a radical change in strategy. But I think, frankly, General Petraeus is the best image that you could possibly have because he's such a great and dynamic man. Second of all, it's going to have to be events on the ground. It's going to have to be facts on the ground.
It's interesting. You talked earlier about Democrats and the fact that they ought to be happy because there will be some drawdown. But today, a prominent Republican says he remains deeply skeptical of the U.S. strategy in Iraq. He compared the long and bloody military campaign to a farmer risking his savings to plant on a floodplain. And this is Senator Richard Lugar, the top Republican on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He said, in my judgment, some type of success in Iraq is possible, but as policymakers, we should acknowledge we are facing extraordinarily narrow margins for achieving our goals.
Well, I have the highest respect for Senator Lugar. He's, at least my opinion is, he's the most respected senator in the United States Senate on national security and foreign policy issues. I would like to say in response, however, that the consequences of failure, the consequences of a date for withdrawal, in my view, have enormous catastrophic consequences in the region. The Sunni will have to help from Saudi Arabia, will have to help Sunni. Iran will be emboldened. Syria will be emboldened to further destabilize the government of Lebanon. There's already 750,000 refugees in Jordan. The list, things are not what we want them to be in Afghanistan, and we see this problem in Pakistan today. Look, they're all tied together. The consequences in the region, the president of Iran a few days ago said, there will be a huge power vacuum in Iraq after the Americans leave, and we will fill it. And so I don't know why we would want to go back to the policy that failed for 4 years. This policy and strategy is succeeding.
You heard from Senator Joe Biden of Delaware saying that there is zero evidence of any political accommodation between sectarian forces. He went on to say the surge has had no impact on reconciliation. How do you achieve that political reconciliation with U.S. troops right there on the ground?
Well, there's been a significant amount of political reconciliation at the local level. There is absolutely no doubt about that. There are civilian and military authorities working together, particularly in Anbar province and in other areas. Are we disappointed and frustrated by the Maliki government's failure to function effectively? Of course we are. But I think that we are seeing significant political progress sort of from the ground up. Does that replace a overall government that's more effective? No, but we are seeing some progress there. And in all due respect to Senator Biden, I wish he would talk to some of the young officers, enlisted people who unfortunately have been there 2, 3, 4 times, and ask them their view, because I think most of them, not all, but most of them will say that since this new strategy has been in effect, they are showing significant success.
As you, I'm sure, realize, Senator Biden is just back from his 8th trip to Iraq. We don't know exactly to whom he spoke, but I'm sure he spoke to a lot of people on the ground.
I'm sure, and because I was over there in July, and my friend Lindsey Graham just came back from serving 2 weeks there in active duty, there's no one they admire more than General Petraeus and General Odierno. And there are, he may find some that don't agree, but the overwhelming majority feel a sense of progress that, frankly, they did not for a number of years.
What was your reaction to the MoveOn.org ads that ran yesterday accusing General Petraeus of cooking the books?
First, I was angered and disgusted, and then I was just saddened that we should have such a level of dialogue in America that we disparage the honor and integrity of a man who served his country his entire adult life, wounded several times, fought in several wars. General Petraeus has a PhD, Diane. If he wanted to go out and get rich and make a lot of money, and the fact is he spent 3 out of the last 5 years away from his home and family, he is one of the great leaders, and to disparage him in that way for political reasons, I think is disgraceful. And it's just terrible.
I think we have to remember that the same thing was done to John Kerry as a nominee for the presidency.
And I condemned that at the time.
We'll take a short break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Senator John McCain is with me. We are talking so far about the comments made by General Petraeus before a House committee yesterday on the surge and his belief that it is working. John McCain has a brand new book out. It's titled Hard Call, Great Decisions and Extraordinary People Who Made Them. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. And, of course, Senator, today
Diane, could I just mention, just before the break?
Sure.
I condemned strongly the things that were said by the Swift boat or whatever it was. I also condemned the terrible things that were said about Max Cleland, my friend and fellow
Vietnam War. Who lost his election.
Yes. And I condemned those campaigns that were mounted against both of them, and I hope that that showed some consistency on
campaigns
my part.
Campaigns get dirtier and dirtier, don't they, Senator?
I think so, and it bothers me because, you know, if you disparage somebody's character and patriotism and the day after the election, then all of a sudden they can't be fine again. So, yeah, I wish we had a higher level of dialogue and discussion, and frankly, we have that on this program.
Today, as you well know, is the anniversary of the September 11th attacks. National Intelligence Director Mike McConnell says he believes the U.S. is safer since the terror attack 6 years ago, but he says we're still not safe. He said on ABC's Good Morning America that Al-Qaeda intends to have an operation in the U.S. that will result in mass casualties. Do you believe that to be true?
Sure, I trust his judgment. He has access to a lot more information than I do. I think we saw in the Osama bin Laden tape that we haven't been able to get him. He still inspires. He still motivates. He still is a great force of evil.
Why do you think we haven't been able to find him, Senator?
Diane, I think for several reasons, but one of them is obvious. That part of the world has never been under anybody's control throughout history. They're basically tribal authorities, if there's any such thing. I think the second of all, we made a couple of mistakes. We could have, I think, gotten him on Tora Bora if we'd have done it differently.
What should we have done?
Oh, we should have had more American troops on the ground. We should have anticipated frankly, where the guy would go if he was driven out.
Do you think Pakistan or Afghanistan is hiding him?
I think he is. I don't have access to a lot of classified information, but the people I talk to believe he's in that area, probably on the Pakistan side is what they say, and I can't verify it. And he has rings and rings of people around him who are going to warn him if there's any effort to move into his area or he's in any danger.
We supposedly, Senator, have the most powerful forces in the whole world. It does seem really rather strange that we cannot find this man. Yes. Is there any reluctance on the part of the U.S. to locate him?
No, but I think it's at least at some level in the Iraqi military there is some reluctance or inability, whichever is a factor. Sometimes it's hard to catch people. Remember when Noriega was on the loose in Panama, it took us a couple of weeks to catch him in Panama. But having said that, I'm confident that if we keep our eye on the ball and we put to use all the capabilities we have, including dramatic improvement, which we need in human intelligence, I think we can get him. And I promise you, as president, I'll get him. I'll get him.
Do you think you will be president?
Oh, yeah. I think we got a very good chance at winning, and I think we're doing well, and we have ups and downs.
Are you really doing well? There were people who were about to write you off in July.
Well, that's true. That's true. And the reports of my political death were obviously premature. We had budget problems, and we fixed them, and I think in the people watched, a lot of people now that Labor Day is over watched the debate the other night in New Hampshire, where according to Frank Luntz's focus group, I won there. I think we're doing well in the town hall meetings. They're extremely well attended. I love that kind of campaigning. It's my favorite way to have the town hall meeting and have, you know, I'm sure you may have heard about it, but a young man the other day stood up and said, "You're too old and you're too senile and you've got Alzheimer's, you know, what about that?" And I told him about my 95-year-old mother, who, as you know, is very vigorous. And then I said, "And thanks for the question, you little jerk. You're drafted, you know." And, you know, that's what you got to do in these things. You got to have fun and you got to have good exchange with people. And not only let them stand up and ask a question and make a comment, but let them come back with another one and another one. You see?
You mentioned the draft.
Yeah.
That word that everybody says cannot be mentioned. Why shouldn't there be a draft if we're going to maintain this kind of military situation in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in other places around the world?
First of all, I think all objective observers or most objective observers think we have the best equipped, best trained, most professional, best military.
But you haven't got enough.
Well, we're one-third smaller than we were at the time of the first Gulf War, the Army and Marine Corps. One of the many mistakes that Rumsfeld made was not expanding the size of the Army and Marine Corps and this incredible strain that we put on them and the Guard and Reserve, as you know.
You've got people who simply do not want to volunteer because they realize how serious the consequences might
be. We are meeting our recruiting goals and in some cases exceeding them. Reenlistment is the highest in the areas of combat. We still have not lowered our standards. I think it's a marketplace out there for young people. And if you offer them incentives and benefits in return for service, as well as appeal to patriotism, that we will be able to. Two other points real quick. One, the draft was never fair, Diane. It was never fair. In the Vietnam War, we asked Appalachian white, ghetto African-American, and barrio Hispanic, the ones that served. The rich ones found a doctor that said they had a bad knee. I think we all know that. The statistics prove that.
So what's happening now?
Well, right now we have a lot of middle-income and higher-income young Americans who have volunteered to serve. I will admit the majority of them are low-income, but during the Vietnam War, I think there was 3 graduates of Harvard in 6 years that went. It was stark. The second thing thing I want to mention, one of them being my friend Tom Ridge, a great American. Let me just mention that finally, the training that's required now for these young Americans to really use it and be qualified and capable takes a lot longer than it used to. So I think what we should do is ask all Americans to serve, not only in the military, but in a broad variety of ways that we can serve their country. That's what we should have done after 9/11. I think it's appropriate to mention that today. Instead of telling them to go shopping and take a trip, we should have said, join the military, join AmeriCorps, join Peace Corps, join neighborhood organizations, help serve your country.
So if you were president, would you call for some kind of mandatory service for all young people, not necessarily military, but some kind of service?
No, but I would appeal to them to serve a cause greater than their own self-interest, and I am confident the majority of Americans would respond, young Americans. I am sure of that because they're wonderful young people, and they would serve their country if called upon.
Senator John McCain, and we're going to open the phones now. Many of you, I know, would like to speak with him. And let's go first to Vicenza, Italy, because I have just returned from a glorious two-week trip with public radio listeners in Italy and Croatia. So let's welcome Jonathan to the program. Good morning to you.
Actually, it's good afternoon here.
Of course.
And it's nice to be on the program. Thank you. And so a pleasure to speak with you, Senator McCain.
Thank you, Jonathan.
I wanted to talk to you about what you said when you said there was political reconciliation in Anbar province. And the only problem I have with that is the fact that there's only one group there. It's all Sunnis. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there is no Shiites there in Anbar to reconcile with the Sunnis. So, of course, there's reconciliation there. I mean, I understand that they've risen up against Al-Qaeda, but the main problem in Iraq is Sunnis and Shia just don't get along and haven't for 1,000 years.
Well, there's reconciliation in other areas, in areas of Baghdad.
But there, you do agree with Jonathan.
That reconciliation has also taken place between the Iraqi army and the people who are there. There is, as Jonathan mentioned, the rejection of Al-Qaeda. There is money coming in from the central government, although reluctantly, into Anbar province. The fact is that when they won the soccer match with Saudi Arabia, thousands and thousands of Iraqis poured out on the streets. And in all due respect, Jonathan, they were waving Iraqi flags, not Kurd flags, not Sunni flags, not Shia flags. This is basically a secular nation. There has to be more reconciliation, but there has been on the ground. And obviously the government has to do a lot more. But there are areas of Iraq which are quiet and safe, and there has been reconciliation. And I'm not saying we don't have a long, long way to go, and we have to repair the damage done by 4 years of bad policy. And I thank you, Jonathan.
Thanks for your call, Jonathan. Let's go now to Little Rock, Arkansas. Good morning, Kimberly.
Good morning. My husband joined the military after another 9/11 attacks. He is an Arabic linguist in the U.S. Army. And the question to Senator McCain is, how can you continue to support the efforts in Iraq when our military families are absolutely stretched beyond their carrying capacities right now? We are tired, we are broke, and we are falling apart. Some of these men are facing their third and fourth 15 to 18 month deployments into these regions. And our families are absolutely just falling apart. Our children are going without their fathers. They're missing significant portions of their lives at home. And they're coming back with all kinds of battle scars, some of them literally, some of them figuratively. And there seems to be very little support in place to support our families. We know from the hospital situations to our veterans coming back to substandard conditions, to the fact that most of our military housing is dilapidated, to the fact that lots of soldiers are not getting the help they need for post-traumatic stress syndrome. There's no money left to support our families anymore after our resources have been depleted by bullets. There's no room for babies. And how are our families supposed to continue to do this? And how can you continue to support the war in Iraq at the cost of hundreds of thousands of families?
Well, first of all, Kimberly, because I am convinced with everything in me that if we set a date for withdrawal and withdraw now, that there will be chaos, genocide in the region, and we will be forced to come back.
Isn't that what's going on now, though?
Oh, it'll be far worse. It'll be a regional. I mean, you know, you're free to disagree, and Kimberly is free to disagree, and everybody's free to disagree.
Well, Kimberly's family is affected.
I deal with military families all the time. I happen to be a military family, okay? And I understand, and I just met with a group of military people yesterday down in Oceania who are serving our country. I meet with them all the time. My job is to make sure that these young people who are serving are best protected, come home safe, and defend America. And I will repeat again, if we set a date for withdrawal, in the view of General Jones, in the view of military leaders, both active duty and retired, we will see chaos, genocide, and we will be back at a greater loss and sacrifice. My frustration, Kimberly, I share with you because of 4 years of failure, of absolute failure on the part of the Rumsfeld strategy. And now I believe we are succeeding, and I get that from the men and women who are serving, and I will continue to do everything that I can to serve them as a member of a military family myself. Thank you.
At 25 before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. It's fascinating to me that she used the phrase bullets instead of babies. She talked about the stretch that these young people are experiencing. Surely you're not just hearing from members of the military and their families who totally support your position.
The majority of people that I have engagement with not only are supportive, they believe they are on an important mission, they believe now they are succeeding, and they believe that they must succeed. That's the view of the majority of people that I talk to. It is not the unanimous opinion, but don't think that these brave young people would be fighting under the conditions which they are if they didn't believe in their mission and their commander, and the majority of them do. Some don't. But I will continue to do everything I can to support them, to provide them with what they need, to implement the Dole Commission recommendations as far as treatment of veterans are concerned. I'm proud of the fact that we've improved housing on military bases all over the country, and I can show you the facts associated with that. If Kimberly has no money, I would be glad to put her in contact with some support groups, and I'd be glad to send her some money myself. But the fact is that this is tough and long and hard, and it's been mismanaged, and I'm trying to make the best of the failures of the past, and we are succeeding, and the consequences of failure will mean more sacrifice, and I believe that with everything in me.
Now, specify, if you would,
yeah,
the administration's mistakes beyond not having sufficient troops.
Well, let me recommend to your reading Fiasco by Tom Ricks, a bestseller, Cobra 2 by Michael Gordon and General Traynor. Both of those were bestsellers. There have been others that chronicle all the failures, not enough troops, allowing the looting, not debathification. The list goes on and on and on. It's as I say, it reads like a train wreck, unfortunately.
John McCain and his new book titled Hard Call, Great Decisions and the Extraordinary People Who Made Them. Short break. We'll be right back.
Decius Daily.
Decius Daily.
Decius Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District,
Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
Decius Daily.
Sign up at decius.com/newsletter.
decius.com/newsletter.
Welcome back. We're going to go back to the phones in just a moment. First, however, a couple of emails. This one from Don. Senator McCain said General Petraeus was wounded several times. He was never wounded in combat. He was accidentally shot by one of his own soldiers during a training exercise. His highest combat award is the Bronze Star with a V device. Questioning the validity of his testimony, given the political nature of his position, is not denigrating his career. That's the difference when comparing the attacks on John Kerry. I'm tired of attacks on policy and tactics are dismissed as attacks on the troops or the generals. Every general before Petraeus said more troops was not the answer. This general was willing to agree with the president and got his job. Why not question him? And why was not this man sworn in?
Well, Don, you and I have a very different view of the military, the requirements of a military officer in their position. He doesn't have a political position. He has a military position. If you think that somehow that he would act in anything but in what he thinks is the best interest of the country, then you and I have an open and honest disagreement. I had the honor of serving as an officer in the military for 22 years, and I can assure you from my experience that the overwhelming majority of military officers that I know serve for the honor of serving their country. It is not a political position to start with. And second of all, Don, in case you hadn't heard, we are succeeding with this new strategy. We are succeeding. Even critics such as yourself admit, the critics now are saying, well, we're succeeding militarily, but we're not succeeding politically. 6 months ago, we were not succeeding militarily, and that was the reason to get out. I would hope that in this country that we would show respect for the officer corps. If you want to disagree with him, that's fine. To run ads in the New York Times that say General Petraeus betray us, in my view, is beneath contempt, sir. And I will continue to think that it is beneath contempt, and I will control myself and be more sad than angry when that's said about a person who has spent his life in service to this country.
Is Don correct that you misspoke when you said that General Petraeus was wounded?
I think he was wounded, but I'm not sure I was told that. Look, whether he was wounded or not is not the point here. The fact he has served with honor after the initial stages of the Iraq War, which was successful, he was regarded as one of the great leaders. He has a PhD. He went back and did the counterinsurgency manual for the United States Army. I will not include whether he was wounded or not in any of my comments about him. In no way does it change my comments about him and my stout defense of his honorable behavior in service to this country.
All right, let's go to Lewisburg, West Virginia. Good morning, Evan. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. I've always respected Senator McCain's straight talk, and I was hoping he can use some of his candor for the fact that many Americans understand that withdrawal or a timetable to leave would be very catastrophic. But what we don't really understand is that if the political process of much of it in the Iraqi government is stagnant, how then is the surge not doomed to fail? That's what we need to understand. So I'm hoping he could shed light on that, and I'll take my comments off the air.
Thanks for calling.
Sure. That's exactly right. There has to be political, economic, and social process for progress. First, you have to establish an environment of military security. I'm not excusing anything that the Maliki government has done or has not done. I would point out it took the United States of America nearly 100 years of existence and fight a bloody civil war before we decided exactly what kind of nation we are. I make no excuses for the Maliki government, but they have been in power for a relatively long period of time after suffering for decades of the most brutal kind of repression. And somebody said there's no Thomas Jeffersons in Iraq today because Saddam killed them all. And I think that's a good point. But we need to have them act, and we need to have them act soon, and that has to be part of the process. But somehow to allege that we have not had success in the military and on the ground politically in other ways, I think is frankly an inaccurate depiction of the situation on the ground. And finally, I want to just go back one more time, Diane. If I can help Kimberly or any military family member in any way, I stand ready to do it. Just contact me in my office.
Give me a telephone number.
I would be glad to 202-224-2235, and I will do anything I can to help. And I would not be asking for this sacrifice if it were not for my profound conviction that to fail now would cause us greater casualties and greater sacrifice in the future. That's what this is all about. And I'm very aware of the political damage that this has done me as I take this position.
Here's an email from Mike who says, there was one time when I would have switched party affiliations to vote for Senator McCain for president. However, after he met with religious right people, after he said previously that they were extremists, I lost respect for him. Why did he do this flip-flop? To many, it was unforgivable.
Well, thank you, Mike. That means that you reject what has been a fundamental principle of my life, and that's reconciliation. I reconciled with the anti-war movement in Vietnam and many others. Reverend Falwell, who's now deceased, came to my office, sat down across from me, and said, I want to put our differences behind us. I believe that that's a principle that I've tried to live my life by. He asked me if I would speak at his graduation of his school. At the same time, Bob Kerry, my friend from the Senate and fellow Vietnam War veteran, asked me to speak at the New School in New York City, one of the most liberal schools in America, where I was not well received. I went to Liberty University, and I went a few weeks later to the New School. I gave the exact same speech about toleration. I believe that when people want to reconcile, that we should reconcile in life, and that has been an important part of my life. And now that Reverend Falwell has passed away, I'm even gladder that I had a reconciliation with him, because I think that's what life should be all about. And if that's unacceptable to you, Mike, then I think that I do not deserve your vote or your support or even your consideration.
And do you think
a member of the anti-war movement came up to, leader in the anti-war movement, who is also now passed away, came to me and said, I want to reconcile and put our differences behind us and work for the good of human rights in the future. And I said, I'm glad to do it.
Do you think that your role in the Keating 5 scandal will haunt you for a lifetime?
Yes. Yes. This is a terrible mistake, wrong thing that I did. I was accused of using poor judgment. It was worse than that, but of course, yeah. And we all make mistakes in life, and that was one of the most serious ones that I have made.
And what about not denouncing the flying of the Confederate flag in South Carolina?
Another wrong thing to do. It was wrong.
Bad mistakes.
Sure.
Do you think people continue to remember those kinds of things and hold you accountable for those mistakes?
I don't know. I don't forget them and hold myself accountable, but the point is that I can point to so many things that I regard as success, legislatively, politically, and in other ways that I am very proud of my life and my career.
And now there's a new scandal coming out of South Carolina. What is that all about?
Could I just say I'm proud of my service to the country. I am grateful for had the opportunity to have served this country in war and in peace. And I'm grateful to the people of Arizona who have understood that I am neither perfect nor without fault, but have served honorably. I don't know much about it. I just heard that there was
Concerning Fred Thompson.
Yeah, that there was some website that attacked Fred and me peripherally, I was told. I didn't see it myself, but that's just what I was told.
What do you think about Fred Thompson's coming into the race?
Well, Fred and I are close friends. We've been very good friends for many years. I think that Fred adds to the race, and I look forward to being in the debates with him and campaigning. I think the more qualified people we have in the campaign, the better off we are.
That's a very, very gracious statement, but as one who is gambling just about everything on the presidency, surely you must not have been too terribly happy to see someone with all of this hoopla surrounding him come into the race as late as he has.
Well, first of all, I'm not gambling anything. I want to be president of the United States, and I think I'm qualified to do so. If I am not selected, I will go back to being a United States senator, which is a great honor for somebody who stood fifth from the bottom of their class at the Naval Academy, and I'm very happy with my life. I'm very happy. I'm a contented person. I'm the luckiest and had the most fortunate life of anybody that'll ever be on your program. But look, I welcome anybody who wants to come into the race, and that's what it, the more choices that the American people are, I think the better informed they are, and I'm confident that I can out-campaign anybody.
How well qualified do you regard Fred Thompson as being?
I think Fred's well qualified. I think Rudy Giuliani is well qualified. I think Duncan Hunter. I think Mike Huckabee. I think all have significant qualifications. I just think that my experience, my knowledge, my background, and my vision qualifies me to be the nominee of the party.
And yet there are a great many people who are dissatisfied as yet with the slate of Republican candidates. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's general dissatisfaction with the Republican Party, but it's also, I mean, to state the obvious, I haven't done a good enough job. I'll do better. We're now into the post Labor Day season, and I'm confident we'll go out and do great and get enthusiastic crowds at the town hall meetings, and things are going to be fine, and it's a lot of fun.
Why do you think people are so dissatisfied with the Republican Party?
I think they're dissatisfied with Congress, but I think they are dissatisfied because of our failure at Hurricane Katrina, because of the spending and corruption, because of our failures in Iraq. I think our Republican base is particularly angry about spending being completely out of control, and it is. And we've got to stop it. We've got to have fiscal sanity. We presided over the largest increase in government since the Great Society. So I think we can fix it. I think America is a right-of-center nation, and we're still a right-of-center party. All we got to do is clean up our act.
At 6 minutes before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. And now to San Antonio, Texas. Good morning, Bob. Thanks for waiting.
Hey, good morning to both of you.
Morning.
Diane, I only spent 4 years in the military. Three of them were overseas. And I would like to support what an earlier caller, Kimberly, said about the devastation that this Iraq war is having on young military families. But the thing that we need to avoid forgetting is something that Tim Russert said a year ago. He said, since we invaded Iraq and began that occupation, 500,000 Iraqis have died. And 2 million Iraqis have found conditions so deplorable in that country that they have become beggars in Syria and Jordan. And there are 2 million additional refugees within the country of Iraq who can't get out of there. And, you know, this whole adventure is a train wreck, as Senator McCain has described it. And, you know, I'm part of the Republican base. I'm part of a former part of Senator McCain's Straight Talk America base. But, you know, I'm just fearful of what another 500 days of George Bush will do. The man should be impeached, and following his impeachment, he should be prosecuted as a war criminal in the international courts.
Well, Bob, I understand your frustration. I understand your sorrow. And I have to say that I predicted that this would happen back in November of 2003, and I gave people straight talk that was doomed to failure. We have now a new strategy and a new general, and I'm sorry to be so repetitious, but it is succeeding. It is bringing about a cessation of the killing, particularly in Anbar province, but also in Baghdad, and this is a very tough, long, hard situation. I want to repeat again. If we leave and set a time date for withdrawal out of our frustration and anger and sorrow at the sacrifice, we will be back. The Iranian president, I hope you listen to his words. There will be a power vacuum in Iraq when the Americans leave, and we will fill the vacuum. I'm not sure we want the Iranians with that kind of involvement in Iraq. The Saudis will have to help the Sunnis. The Syrians are emboldened to overthrow the government of Lebanon. They'll all play, and I believe that that's the consequences of failure, which will then entail more refugees, more killing, more disaster.
I know
and finally,
how strongly.
Finally, the regime of Saddam Hussein, my friend, was where they kept millions of people, about 27 million, in a state of fear and enslavement. And I think that the Iraqi people deserve better than something like they had before. Go ahead, please.
And that is the last word.
Thank you for having me on.
John McCain.
Thanks for the serious conversation. And again, Kimberly, if I contact me, and I'll do everything I can to help anyone listening here who needs some assistance, I'd be glad to provide it. And thank God they're serving. They're the best in America.
His new book is titled Hard Call, Great Decisions, and the Extraordinary People Who Made Them. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks to you, Senator McCain, for being here.
Thank you, Diane.
I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Tanya Weinberg, and Emmanuel Tui. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dory Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR, National Public Radio.